Pure Dog Talk is the podcast on purebred dogs. We talk to the legends in the sport and give you tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Pure Dog Talk is sponsored by ChampionshipBreeders.com. Championship Breeders is a proud supporter of the American Kennel Club, our specialty and all breed clubs, our dog sports, and the gifts of therapy and service from our canine companions. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves. Today is Mentor Monday, and we have one quick reminder from your Dog Show Superintendents Association. Get your entries in early. It's a win-win. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I am your host, Laura Reeves, and I am thrilled to be joined today by Susie Zaramy. She is the founder of the National Purebred Dog Day website and campaign. And Susie, welcome so much. I am super excited for people to get to listen to you talk.
Laura, I'm just delighted to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
And Susie, you are a Pooley fancier, yes?
I am, since 1978.
Oh my goodness. And what started you in Pooleys?
I'm Hungarian.
There
my parents,
go.
My whole family. In fact, I'm the only person in my family born here. Hungarian was my first language, and I grew up with stories of the Pooley. But back in the 70s, it was very difficult to find one. And when I finally did find one, it made my mother cry. She had had a Pooley in Hungary, and during the war, she lost that dog in a bombing. And she hadn't laid eyes on another one until I brought home a Pooley puppy. And she nestled her face into that dog's fur and just wept. And it was then, although unbeknownst to me at the time, the power that a dog would have, not just to an individual, but to a culture.
Right. Wow, that just gave me goosebumps.
Yeah, that's what started me on the breed.
And that is amazing. So, Susie, you have a lot of hats that you wear, I guess would be one way to say it. You work with Westminster Kennel Club. And
I do.
In 2013, you started this very, very powerful project that you're going on. So,
and who knew?
Exactly. What got you started on that? What's the backstory on National Purebred Dog Day?
Laura, I'm a writer by profession. And in the course of research for an article, I knew that there was a National Dog Day and a National Puppy Day and a National Everything Day. So I wanted to know when National Purebred Dog Day was. And I'm a decent researcher, but I could not believe that I couldn't find it. And I researched and researched and could not find it. And you have to remember that in 2013, it was not a good year to be a purebred dog owner or breeder. It was the height of the Adopt-Don't-Shop movement. The animal rights people were gaining ground. We were feeling assaulted. It was just a perfect storm of elements. So in a huff, I bought a $5 stock photo, threw up a Facebook page, called it National Purebred Dog Day, and then promptly forgot about it because I was under deadline and I had an article to write. A few days later, the article was done. I turned it in, and then I thought, oh yeah, I did that. So I went back to the Facebook page just to see, and I was astounded to see 3,000 people on it. And I thought to myself, this means something, huh? And so from that point on, the story takes on the plot of the children's book, If You Give a Mouse a Cookie. Are you familiar with it?
Yes.
So for the audience in the story, if you give a mouse a cookie, he'll get thirsty, he'll want milk. If you give him milk, he'll get sleepy and he'll want a nap. Everything you do for this mouse leads to something else. And by starting that Facebook page, I started a series of events that I could never have guessed would lead to this point in time. It's been gratifying, scary, daunting, exhilarating. It's been a lot of things all at once. And as you said, I wear a lot of hats doing it. And when people ask me how I do it, I tell them if they saw my house, they'd know exactly how I do it. Because
I feel your pain, man.
We write messages to each other in the dust on the tables, and cobwebs count as decorative elements.
At my house, we name the dust bunnies. So.
Oh, yeah. So I started the Facebook page, and when it hit 22,000 people, I knew that a Facebook page was not going to be enough. Clearly, this was resonating with people who also felt as I did. And so I started a Kickstarter campaign to fund the building of a website because I didn't have the money to do it. And so we realized almost twice what I asked for to get the website built. And at that time, Facebook didn't have a search feature. So I wanted the site to be educational, to be easy to find things. I really knew in my head that I wanted it to be easy to navigate, to be kind of like a Pinterest for dog people. I also wanted to use it as an opportunity to teach people who weren't in the dog fancy, didn't care, loved their dogs. I wanted them to learn why soundness matters in a dog. I wanted them to learn why pasterns or hock joints or stifles matter in a dog that will never step foot in a show ring. Because I point out to them, does your dog like to play frisbee? Does it like to jog? Does it like to go up and down stairs? These are all things that matter to a dog that will never leave the yard. And I want them to learn, more than anything else, that it does matter. And I try to teach them as best I can, with my own limited knowledge, that once you discover that your dog may have maybe a structural issue, what does that mean to them? And I tell them, it means that you keep loving your dog, but maybe you don't take a 5-mile jog. Maybe you don't do competitive frisbee. Maybe you take it easy on the joints and do less taxing endeavors for the dog. So I'm hoping that once they learn that, I really do like to jog, but I don't want to hurt my dog, maybe they'll get their next dog from a breeder who cares about those things.
Right. And I think that public education is so imperative and bringing people into this conversation. And you talk a lot about that. You talk about how to have conversations with people. My favorite thing that I took away from the website when I was reading it recently, museum pieces with a pulse. I would love to have a little conversation about that and why those breeders are curators.
Well, they absolutely are. And one of the things I try to stress is the use of a language and how important it is, the lexicon that we use. When you control words, you shape thought. Never again say breeder by itself when referring to the people who are doing it right. We are heritage breeders. We are legacy breeders, preservation breeders, or conservation breeders. And there is a world of difference between us and substandard breeders who really don't know what they're doing, don't know about genetics, don't much care. There's a big difference. And we have been slow to join this conversation as purebred dog curators, as you said. We have a lot of catching up to do. They've done a brilliant job of remarketing themselves as the ones who care more than anything about the future of dogs, when in reality, purebred dog people have been doing rescue long before the rescue movement became what it is now. Many of us started out with mixed breeds. Many of us have canine families that include a mixed breed or a rescue dog, mine included. I have never drawn a line in the sand, although many have wanted me to, but I've never drawn a line in the sand that says purebred dog or nothing. My feeling is that whatever dog you get, do your homework before you get it. If it's a shelter or rescue dog, have a plan B or C in place, because sometimes these dogs arrive with issues, and then do right by the dog. But also never vilify the person who needs predictability in their dog. Perhaps they're a young family about to have a baby. They want to get a dog that can grow up with the baby. You don't always know what you're going to get when you get a dog from the shelter or a rescue dog. You don't know what went into making this dog. You don't always know what size it's going to be. You get that when you get a well-bred dog from a heritage breeder. Maybe a couple wants to get a dog for mom and dad who are in their 70s. They're very active 70s, but they want the mom and dad to have a dog they can continue to walk. But they also want a dog that will not be too much to handle 10 years later when they're in their 80s. And a purebred dog offers that. It offers predictability that's important to a lot of people. I would like to bring balance back to the conversation about dog ownership. I would like to bring us back to a place where it doesn't matter what you own, as long as you respect each other's choices and as long as you do your homework and do right by that dog.
Yeah, the do right by the dog, take care of the dog, those are critical no matter what kind of dog you have.
Absolutely.
And I think that too many times people get confused between taking good care of your dog and what we're allowed to do as preservation breeders and choices we have the freedom to make.
Yeah, it's a mistake to paint any one group with too broad a brush. And it happens to breeders, has happened for years. They make no distinction between a substandard breeder and the breeder doing it right. And they fail to understand that nobody dislikes the bad breeder more than the person doing it right. But the rescue group movement also has a lot to answer for. I've gone to conferences that were largely frequented by well-meaning rescue people, but they didn't understand calming signals in their dogs. And so they would be up at dawn doing doga with their dogs. And that dog would still be with them at midnight for a Halloween party. And the dog never had a crate it could go into. It never had any place it could go to just have downtime. And I was baffled that these folks who were writing about dogs and professed to be dog experts failed to understand the stress their dogs were under. They thought that because the dogs were with them 24/7, they were being good owners. I think if they understood differently, they would have been horrified. But what I disliked was the smugness and the superiority that they seemed to exude once they found out that a breeder was in their midst or a purebred dog person. And I object to this moral high ground that they've taken that I think is undeserved and certainly unwarranted in many cases. There are some people doing fabulous rescue work, and I salute them. But it's too big a world and it's too broad a brush to paint any one group, breeders included.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So with your mission of public education and really changing the language, you know, following kind of this footsteps, NAIA, we spoke with Patty Strand on a podcast not too long ago, and we talked about the same sorts of things, that language is so powerful. Can you talk to us a little bit, some of the highlights? I know Colorado officially recognized National Purebred Dog Day a couple of years ago.
They did, and Georgia did it 2 weeks ago. And it's my understanding that the resolution is also in the legislatures for Connecticut and Illinois. And we know that it's also been introduced by a couple of veterinarians on both sides of the U.S. Congress. I don't know that Congress is in a voting mood for anything these days, but eventually I'm confident that it will get passed. And why I think the day is important is that I have encountered people that are not like you or I, who can talk to anybody at any time about anything. These are shy people. They're reserved. They're not comfortable with it. But I thought if I could give them one day out of the year when it's not only okay, but expected to be proud of being a purebred dog owner, then maybe that was good enough to have the day exist. And perhaps with time, the sentiment of that day would spill over into the other days out of the year. This year, I introduced a kerchief, a bandana actually, for dogs, and it reads, "Ask about my heritage." And I love this idea because it takes the burden of opening the conversation from the person to the dog. Even a shy person will respond to a question, "Okay, so tell me about your dog's heritage." And they can say, "Well, it's a Rhodesian Ridgeback, and it's from this country, and it was a lion hunter, and this is what the deal is with the ridge on the back." And before they know it, they're 15 minutes into a conversation educating somebody else about their breed. And success begets success. If they have a good experience with one person, they'll feel emboldened, I'd like to think, in having it with another. Not everyone they encounter is going to be warm and fuzzy. Some people will vilify them. Some will give them the cold shoulder. It happens a lot. I hear it a lot. But in time, eventually you learn how to navigate those waters. And I would like National Purebred Dog Day to give people that opportunity to have that conversation with friends, with relatives, with neighbors. One of the stories I heard, Laura, that absolutely took my breath away involved the people who owned a boarding facility. They bought a Vizsla from a reputable, conscientious heritage breeder and then lied about it to all their colleagues, their friends, their relatives. They told everyone the dog was a rescue. And I thought, something is seriously out of whack when we have to lie about where we get a dog. But they didn't want the grief. And I can't tell you how many stories I've heard of divisions in families, Thanksgiving dinners disrupted because someone in the family was the rescue person and someone else wasn't, and it was off to the races. I have a photograph of a guy named Steve, who is I don't know what you call them. If he were a coffee shop, it'd be a barista, but he pulls the tabs on beer in a brew pub. And Steve is a really nice guy. And for several years, even now, I have a sign that people can download and print that reads, "I Heart." It's the shape of a red heart, purebred dogs. And because this was a local brew pub, I was comfortable going in, knowing that there were people that went in there with their dogs. And I went in with the signs and got different people to pose with the signs. And that's something that I put on social media on May 1st. I asked Steve to hold the sign, and he grabbed it. And he held it up and then realized, I don't know what this says. He turned it over, read it, and then looked at me and he said, "I can't hold this. I rescue." And I said, "Steve, rescue dogs can be purebred dogs too." And it never occurred to him. He had cut his teeth on the message that it was rescue dog or nothing, that there was no in between. Once he understood that, he was comfortable holding the sign. But I've always kept that picture as a reminder of how important it is that we recalibrate the thinking. of the people around us. This is, I think, it sounds dramatic to say it's a culture war, but it kind of is. We have an entire generation that's been raised on the adopt, don't shop mantra, and it's going to take some effort to bring those people back to balance, because right now I think they're out of balance.
Well, and I think we could say that for many things in the world, but
absolutely.
I do think that you're right. You know, we all have had experiences with rescue folks who just, that's it. They've had their bad experiences. They've been burned and they can't think of anything other than breeder with a bad bee.
Yeah. This isn't to say that it didn't need to happen. It's been 30 years in the making. There was a time when shelter dogs, rescue dogs got no attention at all. And so it's not a bad thing that there was a movement to improve their lives. Who could object to that? But it's gone from one extreme to the other. And I'm amused at how interesting it is that we've come so full circle. 150 years ago, only the aristocracy, only the wealthy, only the well-bred, quote-unquote, people owned purebred dogs, and everybody else was relegated to owning a mutt. And one of the pride and joys for a family was to get a purebred dog because it meant they had arrived. And here we are now, 150 years later, and the reverse is true. Neither is healthy. It needs to be somewhere in the middle where you find a good fit for yourself, whether it's a purebred dog or not a purebred dog. But I think I'd like to encourage people to do their homework and, again, do right by the dog, but do the right thing and find a good fit for yourself and your family. I remember talking with a woman who was in her late 50s. She had an older Down syndrome child at home. And unbelievably, she also had another child, adults, that was a special needs person. They wanted to get a dog to keep the kids company, and they were talked into getting a border collie, a young border collie, by a rescue group. I can't think of a worse fit. Border collies are fabulous dogs, but they sleep with one eye open. They'll herd until they drop. Nobody in that family had the wherewithal to keep a dog like that busy enough to sleep and to get its exercise. It was a situation that was grossly unfair to everyone, including the dog.
Right. Well, and I think one of the things that I have enjoyed the most on the National Purebred Dog Day site, I quite enjoy the spotlights that you do on each of the breeds. And I think those are so important, and it gives people an opportunity to have conversation with each other as preservation breeders, but also with the public. And I think that, you know, Michelle Santana in Monday's episode talked about, we are the ones who need to talk to people. We have the knowledge to share. And I love that your website offers people that meeting place to share that information.
I appreciate that you see that, and I appreciate that you're alluding to what I've been trying to accomplish, which is to have a sense of community. One of the mistakes that I think we have all made as purebred dog fanciers is that we expect people to come to us. We have Meet the Breeds venues, but again, we're putting the burden on the public of going there to see our dogs, and I think we've gotten it wrong. I think we need to bring it to people. I have a lot of ideas, big goals, very little funding, not enough time, not enough staff, but one of these days we'll get there. That's the nature of grassroots movements, which I now recognize that this kind of is. I hadn't intended it to be. Again, getting back to that, if you give a mouse a cookie, one thing led to another. But I do think I would like to see Meet the Breeds happening in every state. I don't care if it's six breeds. I don't care if it's in Podunk, USA. I think we need to bring that event to people so they can see dogs where they are. There was a time when here in Colorado, we had Meet the Breeds at bank lobbies. We had them in malls. We had them in parks. We were delighted to have them anywhere we could get. I don't know how we got away from that, maybe because we became more litigious as a society, but I think we need to get back to that. We need to bring our dogs to the people. I also would like to see something that I've been calling Meet the Breed in School. PETA was on point a few years ago for all the wrong reasons, and I don't agree with them, but they were very smart in getting to schools, getting to children. They would bring in comic books and talk about sea kittens. Do you know what a sea kitten is?
I have no idea.
A sea kitten is a fish. PETA was painting fish as sea kittens. Now, I think anything with a pulse deserves to have a good life, free of pain, free of suffering, but there is a difference between fish and cats. I think we need to figure out how to get our dogs into schools. And that's another topic for another day. But it's another goal of mine, is to bring dogs into the classroom. There are so many lessons that come with a purebred dog. And I propose that we provide lesson plans to teachers who are already overworked but give them lesson plans that show them how to bring in geography and language and culture and history all with one dog. I mean, you bring in a poolie and you can explain where Hungary is. You can explain about what Hungarians did 100 years ago and why they needed a sheepdog, because sheep were an important part of livelihoods. You can talk about the language and how Hungarian is part of the Finno-Ugric language tree, and it's not related to anything else other than Estonian and Turkish and one other thing I can't think of. But there's a lot, and I should know this, but there are a lot of lessons that come with any breed. Pick a breed. You could come in wearing native costume. The potential is endless. It's really exciting, but it has to happen, and it'll happen, but slowly.
But I think, too, what you're offering is a suggestion for our fanciers today. People always are asking, what can we do? How can we make it better? Well, here's a great suggestion. Start with your local kennel club and start this. Each of us can do something.
We can.
Even if it's something small, to make a difference in our corner of the world.
I have encouraged people, and I'm often asked, as you can imagine, what can I do on May 1st? And short of getting Meet the Breeds on a national scale, short of getting the dogs into the schools, those things have a lot of foundations to put into place before they can happen. But I think our very best PR are our dogs. And I don't think we're doing a good enough job of getting them out to be seen. If you go out anywhere with a borzoi, you stop traffic. We see borzois all the time at a dog show, but they're gorgeous traffic-stopping dogs who have so much heritage, so much culture. And we're not really going out into the public square to where they can be seen by more people. A lot of us don't necessarily invite that because we're tired of answering the same question 100 times. If I had a dime for every time I was asked, does the coat do that naturally? How does the dog see? Which end eats? I've heard it all. But at least on that one day out of the year, suck it up. Be of good cheer. Go out there with your dog and encourage that conversation. And one person at a time, you can change hearts and minds. When people get to know that you're not an ogre, that you care about all dogs, that you happen to need predictability and you love this particular breed, whatever it is, they get to personalize what it means to be a purebred dog owner. Right now, people are getting their bullet points from late-night commercials from HSUS. They're seeing that their favorite celebrities own shelter and rescue dogs. They're not getting our message because we're not bringing it to them. Where are they going to get it? If they don't read dog publications, if they don't go to dog shows, where is the average person supposed to get their information about purebred dogs? There are dog shows on TV 2 or 3 times a year, but that isn't necessarily the only thing that we're about. Lots of people own purebred dogs that never go to dog shows. We need to get that message out as to what it means to have a purebred dog as a companion, as a pet.
Absolutely. And I think that I love the idea of, if you will, taking to the streets with your purebred dog on May 1st. And today is May 1st. And so as you're listening to this podcast, take your dog out and walk it on the street and tell somebody what it is.
Absolutely. They will ask. And there is no breed that's too common or uncommon not to go out and ask, because even Labrador Retrievers and Golden Retrievers and Beagles, they're popular dogs, but they're popular for a reason. And they have a rich heritage. And if you don't know it, maybe you need to bone up on it too, so that you know about the museum piece with the pulse that you have sitting at your feet. A lot of times people will encounter a dog that doesn't do the job for which it was bred anymore. We don't hunt otters anymore. There are 800 otters left in the world, which is an appalling number. It's such a wonderful breed. And I've heard the argument that some people are perfectly all right with an otter hound going extinct, because why would you have one? And so I turn that conversation around and ask, do you have a museum piece at home? Or more likely, do you have an antique at home? And normally, most people have something that's old. And so I'll ask them, why do you have it? Why would you have an antique dresser when plastic is cheaper, it's more durable, and you can hose it down? And invariably, if they're being honest, they will answer the question for you. They will provide the answers as to why purebred dogs are worth keeping. Because they'll point out that it spoke to a moment in time. It's unique. It's beautiful. It's special. Maybe it was important to somebody who made it. And I would offer the suggestion that the very same can be said of purebred dogs, that they were created by cultures for a reason, that they have history, they have legacy. And if you lose any of these dogs, you lose part of the culture that created it for a reason. And to me, that's criminal. I don't want to see anything go extinct in my lifetime, let alone a dog breed that's been around for hundreds of years. Not on my watch.
Absolutely, Susie. And the only other one I was going to mention from the website that I thought was a truly astounding number is that there are any number, really, of low entry or low registration breeds, that there are fewer of them in the world than there are pandas.
It's astounding, isn't it? The Skye Terrier and Dandie Dinmont come to mind. In fact, most of the British Terrier breeds are the ones that are in the most trouble. Their numbers may be better in this country, but I think it's very sad when they're not able to sustain their numbers in the country of their own creation. Even bloodhounds, the dogs that we rely on to find somebody with Alzheimer's, to find a lost child, to find a bad guy, even bloodhounds are struggling in their country of origin. What a shame it would be to lose a breed that is of such service to humanity, such a wonderful breed, just the coolest dog ever. How criminal would it be to lose that? And that dog goes all the way back to the Talbot Hound. That goes back, you know, to the Middle Ages. That's a legacy. That's a history.
Yeah, to the Druids.
I guess I'd want to encourage anybody listening that has a purebred dog at their feet to take a second look at your dog, whatever their breed is, because you have something very special, whether it's the ubiquitous Beagle, Snoopy, and or something as exotic as a Moody or Chorka or a Lundehund. Every dog is very special. It's very unique. It has a story. Learn the story. Share it with someone you know. And then revel in it. Revel how cool it is that you have a bit of history that you get to feed every day and snuggle with and go to bed or work with. It's very cool.
It is very cool. And Susie, your work is very cool.
Thank you
so very, very much for your time.
Oh, I appreciate
and your effort and your commitment.
Thank you. I appreciate the chance to talk the ears off your audience. Once I get going on this subject, it's hard to stop.
That's good.
It's a very big topic, and we need all hands on deck.
It is. It is. And we appreciate your time, and we look forward to working with you a little bit on this, Susie, okay?
You bet. Thank you, Laura.
Awesome. Thanks very much.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. This will help share the love with others out there in the sport. This has been Pure Dog Talk with your host, Laura Reeves. We hope you can join us next time as we continue on the journey to success with your purebred dog.